Before we get going in earnest on this episode, I have a handful of housekeeping items. Number one, I want to issue a correction for the episode we published on August 9th, the one where I played Two Truths and a Lie with Steven about a number of stops on the home field can't-miss kickoff tour presented by Modelo. During the segment about the national championship, which is being played in Miami, I said the last Big Ten team to win in Hard Rock Stadium was Wisconsin, but that was an error. I overlooked Michigan State's 2021 road win over the Hurricanes. And though this did not change the truth or falsehood of the statement I gave Godfrey, I did want to get the correct info out there. No disrespect was intended to you, fans of Sparty. Number two, today's episode is a thing we haven't done before. It's me interviewing another sports media member about a story they did. Will we do this format again? Maybe. Do we have a clever name for it, like we do for Numbers and Words, or We're Not All Like This? Nope. Either way, we welcome your feedback, and if you want to support Phantom Island as a whole, you can go to phantomisland.show to sign up for a paid membership and get access to the full interview and those other shows I mentioned. Number three, this is my quick regular shout out to our subscribers in the producer tier. Steven and I thank you for going above and beyond to help make this independent media entity work. All our subscribers are good-looking and smart and thoughtful people, and the producers are especially so. Okay, that's it. Let's get rolling.
Every rustle in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord and leave me here.
My guest today is Shahan Jayaraja, a national college football writer for CBS Sports, one of the co-hosts of College Football Insiders, and the first vice president of the Football Writers Association of America. I should emphasize, you are not the first ever vice president. First is the like ordinal number of vice president that you are in the current FWAA leadership. Is that correct?
That's correct. For whatever reason, we need three vice presidents. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. Day to day, it's not very much. So at least we have some backups to pick up the slack that I might or might not be doing.
Okay. Well, I feel honored that I got, with all due respect to others, I feel very honored that I got the first vice president on the podcast today. We are here to talk about your article that came out. Now we're almost coming up on like 2 months since this came out.
I know.
About what I will just sort of like gloss over as the interesting offseason strategy Texas Tech embraced with regards to the transfer portal. If you're listening to this and you're like, I have no idea what Ryan's talking about, I have confirmed that if you Google Texas Tech CBS billionaire, you will get, the first result you get will be Sean's very well-written and reported story about this. But to give you sort of like the elevator pitch version, because of how things have lined up with evolving changes in the college football universe and what's allowed and what's not, Texas Tech, led by a oil-backed billionaire, decided we're going to go very aggressively into the transfer portal. We're going to really sort of like build up a team to make a really big push to be successful in the 2025 season. A lot of that was also based on decision-making on building up the lines, not exclusively, but that was a big part of it. And it is admittedly a one-year strategy because since your article came out and since, you know, since we're now in August, what Texas Tech did this offseason, at least right now, doesn't seem like it can be repeated in a future offseason. Do you feel like I've given people enough of a summary, but also left enough on the page for them to go read your story?
Yes, and just to warn people, it's 5,000 words, so there's still a lot left on the page, but I promise it goes quick.
Yes, I would agree with that. It does not feel laborious in any ways. All right, so here's where I want to start. When did you first start to hear, oh, something is happening at Texas Tech, or when did this sort of cross your radar? I know you are a state of Texas guy by sort of, you know, background, but you are also a national college football reporter. Do you remember sort of like when this started to get on your radar?
I think the thing that really caught my attention was after Joey McGuire became head coach there. And for people who don't remember, by the way, let me back up just a little bit more. So the previous coach there was Matt Wells, who was a Utah State guy, very much a like ball coach, grind in the shadows sort of thing. And I think that he thought when he came to Texas Tech, I can just like grind in the shadows and develop, right? Well, even though it's a rural, isolated program, I guess you could call it, it doesn't work the same way as Utah State mm-hmm. or as, you know, a Western program, right? Like, you are still very much expected to be the mayor of Lubbock, the governor of West Texas. And I think that Joey McGuire, right from the beginning, made clear, like, that's me. Like, I'm the new mascot of your home, essentially. And so that's one piece of it, was Joey McGuire came in, former Texas high school football coach outside of Fort Worth at Cedar Hill. The other thing, though, that I think was even bigger is you started to see some donations, and they weren't Cody Campbell at the beginning. Now, he's obviously been a part of it. But you started to see some donations and some facility projects that were like, oh, they raised $200 million in 2 weeks. Okay. Like, so it just became very clear at that moment that there was, this is probably back in 2022, mm-hmm. that there was an energy from the booster core there that felt a little bit different. Now, I think that when you start talking about the pure football side of things, I mean, one, that first season, and I know that like it's funny, I've even talked to Joey about this. I'm like, you have talked so much that you've set a bar for yourself that frankly has not historically been reasonable at Texas Tech. I mean, he's got 3 straight 8-win seasons. He's the first Texas Tech coach since the Southwest Conference to have 3 straight conference winning records. But to go back to that first season, 2022, it was the first time that Texas Tech had ever beaten both Texas and Oklahoma in the same season. And so there was like some legitimate proof of concept that Joey McGuire was going to come in here and do some things that haven't been done here in a very long time. And so I think that all of this energy really started to come together, and it started to become, okay, well, like, now we kind of need somebody to push that energy in a direction. And that's really where I think Cody Campbell came in.
So based on sort of this aggressive move that the Red Raiders made in the transfer portal, is it 20 players that they got this offseason all total?
Yeah, 21, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Do you, either from your own assessment or from what you heard talking to the program, is there like a specific area that you could point out to sort of say like, okay, if you're watching Texas Tech this year, this is where, if this works, you will see the most dramatic improvement. Is there a position group or sort of like a specific area of weakness that they are hoping to flip into a strength this year?
Pass rush, pass rush, pass rush. Like, that is really where they prioritize. That's a difficult word to say, pass rush. but like, that's where they put the vast majority of their resources. Also on the offensive line, mm-hmm. definitely, but you're going to see it much more when you're watching games on the defensive line. This is a top 5 defensive line / pass rush in college football. It's one of the best in the Big 12 in years, right? Like, if you put aside Texas and Oklahoma, like, maybe you're talking like, you know, 2019 Baylor is pretty like, but like, there's, it's been a while is the point since we've seen a defensive line group like this. And it's interesting too. I think that the moment that this went from, oh, this is a really nice story to, oh, was when David Bailey committed there. Mm-hmm. The Stanford transfer, he only transferred because Troy Taylor was fired after his whole investigation situation. And so he became a free agent, essentially, at a time when there were no other free agents in the portal. So anybody could bid anything for him. He was the only candidate.
Right.
And Texas Tech got him over Texas and UCLA and other places, right? So that's where they expect to be great. And I've had so many people come to me and tell me, like, well, you know, can I really believe in Texas Tech? Like, I don't believe, like, Baron Morton's still their quarterback. But it's very, very explicit that while they do believe in Baron Morton, to be clear, and they feel like he's just been put in some bad situations because of their offensive struggles, like, they want to be the Philadelphia Eagles. They want to be a team that has a good quarterback, but like, we don't need the quarterback to save us. We want to be able to bulldoze 2/3 of the teams on our schedule. And the comparison that I've made is they have 3 really tough road games, Utah, Kansas State, Arizona State, all very losable games, no matter how good you are. Well, like it's more a conversation of, well, what if 8 of the other games are just not competitive, right? Like what if you just are able to bulldoze Cincinnati? What if you're just able to bulldoze Houston? And like, it's not even like a close game. It's not a conversation. And you just play a 4-game schedule and go 2-2. I mean, that's 10 wins, right? That's in many ways the strategy, you know, before Super League, all this sort of stuff. But like, that's very much like how Oklahoma built their stuff, right? Yeah. Like they just dominated everybody and played 2 competitive games. Ohio State, right? They dominated everybody, played 2 competitive games. So that's very much where they wanted to get to, was we want to be so good in the trenches that the middle class of teams can't even compete with us.
That we're pulling starters in the middle of the third quarter, basically.
Exactly. And again, it, when you look at the way, obviously it's not to the level, and I'm not saying it is, but like when you look to like peak Saban Bama teams, right? Like they just, it didn't matter who was at quarterback. It didn't matter, like, because ultimately it was just like, oh, we literally can't physically compete with these players. And one thing that their GM, James Blanchard, said, I believe, in an ESPN story separate of this was, look, when Ole Miss did that last year, they had a top 5 defensive line in the country, but that wasn't a game wrecker in the SEC necessarily. Well, in the Big 12, like, there aren't lines like this, right? If you took Ole Miss's defensive line from last season and put it at Kansas State, like they probably win the league, right? Like it probably does make that much difference. So the idea is, let's do that at Texas Tech in a league where there are lots of good teams, but none that are physically overwhelming you back.
That where this mismatch can be amplified in some ways that it might not be reflected in others.
So
when you sort of approach this, when somebody approaches this story casually and says, okay, bringing in this big star-studded transfer class with like the expectations that are attached to it, it is hard, and maybe this is just me because I'm a hater, it is hard to immediately not think of Florida State, last year Florida State specifically, a school that has, I think at a very general level, there are certainly like key differences, and I think your article gets into them to some extent. But like, that's a school that has leaned on the transfer portal, has sort of said, like, we can make this work. Obviously, last year goes 2-10. I don't think you can chalk all of that up to, well, you went too transfer heavy or whatever. But based on the people you've talked to in Lubbock, what are they sort of aware of, like, that risk? And what are they doing to sort of actively avoid what I will uncharitably call the FSU outcome?
Well, I will actually kind of reframe a little bit, because an example of this working was Florida State the year before that.
Sure. Right? Like, yes, 100%.
They really used transfers to fill specific holes on a roster that was already pretty good.
Yes.
And that's where I think the comparison is more reasonable, right? Because what Florida State tried to do in 2024 was, let's try to build a football team out of transfers. And, you know, it was partially out of necessity, right? Because of the amount of guys that they lost after that season. That's not the case at Texas Tech. Texas Tech returns most of their best players from 2024, when they won 8 games or whatever it was, and had a chance to be in the Big 12 title race. So this is very much an additive situation, not necessarily a foundational situation, I guess you could call it. Because again, I think that you look at the best teams and the ones that have had a chance, like, it's not that they don't use a transfer portal, it's that they use it in specific ways. I'll even, you know, make another comparison of a team I'm very high on, like LSU's, like, we have to fix our pass defense. We have to get better in the secondary. So we're going to bring over 5 guys to compete for 3 positions. And like, but we're also like doing that because we're so good at quarterback and on the defensive line. And like, so we actually have all these other pieces. Let's just try to get that final hole filled. Texas has done that in the past with like wide receivers, stuff like that. Georgia this year with wide receivers. And so I think that that's the biggest difference, is that this is not trying to save a roster that was depleted. And one thing that tech staff like really, really emphasized to me, because they didn't lose a lot of guys to the portal, by the way. Like they retained even most of the guys who will now be backups. The problem with their roster isn't that they feel like the guys that they have aren't good. It's that they feel like the guys that they have are too young, right? Mm. Like they have high school kids who are redshirt freshmen who they love, but like this is a roster that wants to compete in 2025. Right. And so I think that actually the long-term adjustment, if this works, that I expect teams to make is understanding their timelines. I think that Big 12 teams, frankly, have been really, really good at this, of understanding, you know what, like last year, for example, I think Kansas State understood, like, we got a freshman quarterback, or a first year quarterback rather, and like, we're probably not going to win the league. So let's not overspend. Let's not overdo it on this year. You know, let's try to make sure that we get our guys in next year so that we're able to contend for the league. Right. And so I think that for Texas Tech, they're like, well, it's not just the fact that we can get players. It's also, we have a roster in 2025 that was already going to be pretty good. So let's take it from good to great.
At the tone, the free preview portion of this episode will conclude. Boop! If you want to unlock the rest of the episode, go to phantomisland.show and sign up for a membership today. Phantom Island is produced by Michael Serber and presented by Homefield. Our theme music by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard comes from the song Phantom Island from their album of the same name. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.